Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Heather Reads Between the Lines. Today is going to be a little bit interesting. We've been kind of crazy busy out today, so we're going to see how it goes. But we're going to go ahead and get started with taking a look at one more look at what's probably my most favorite of the novels that we've read so far, A Wolf in Duke's Clothing. And before we even start talking about that book, we're going to go ahead and maybe talk real quick about source books. So source books is a little bit different from Harlequin. Harlequin focuses entirely on romance. That's their bread and butter. Sourcebooks, on the other hand, is an independent publisher based out of Illinois, and they've got several imprints. And Sourcebooks Casablanca is the imprint for their romance section. But they have like a really wide division of lots of different genres. They cover pretty much everything from children's books to mystery to nonfiction. And what makes them stand out for me is that they're completely women-led and founded. So they started from, according to them, a little small room, like basically a room inside of an apartment, publishing just one or two books. And now they're the largest woman-owned trade publisher in North America, according to their website. So well done for them. And I'm really excited that I got to branch out. One of the reasons that I wanted to focus on Harlequin first, and the biggest reason is, well, they're bite-sized. I can maybe read one in 2 to 3 hours, and it helps me produce an episode in several days, and I can keep my run times and production times somewhat reasonable. It keeps me from burning out too quickly. I know that's a big risk in this kind of industry, and it really helps me keep my work and life balance in check. And of course, you know, the other reason is that Harlequin is practically infamous as erotic literature, and it's honestly really fun to read them. I will say, though, so far, I haven't really found anything that I would expect to be incredibly spicy in these books. I was expecting maybe more graphic descriptions, I guess, but Sourcebooks kind of gave me the most interesting scenes that we've seen so far. We'll talk about that in a minute, though. The bookstore near me doesn't really keep a lot of Harlequins in stock, though they do boast a really large romance section. And that is how I found Sourcebooks via A Wolf in Duke's Clothing. And I kind of realized after reading it, I would be missing out on a lot of different things. Harlequin's pretty tame, I think we might say. I have found books that I'm pretty sure would not be found anywhere near Harlequin's lineup. And I don't want to miss on those. It's going to be really interesting. I'm going to probably start doing some more research on different publishers. Sourcebooks is definitely going to be a return. I will definitely be going back to them. Harlequin will still be a really big part. We're going through some changes around here at the podcast. We'll talk more about that as time goes on. But basically this is me hanging up the, currently under construction sign. Please excuse the dust, as one might say. I'll talk more about that when we're ready to really talk about that. That doesn't make any sense, does it? I will reveal more as more is ready to be revealed. Sure, let's go with that one. And I really, really, really enjoyed reading A Wolf in Duke's Clothing. It's so very different from what we've read so far, and it was everything that I hoped it would be. It had the right blend of historical immersion and fantasy, and I think the author did an excellent job in both of those spaces. My historical experience comes mostly from medieval and Ren fairs, and their definition of historical accuracy is fluid at best, fantastical at its wildest. A large fair that I worked at focused on Tudor England, that time period, during the reign of King Henry VIII. So I don't have a lot of like practical experience with Regency history. I think the closest I might have gotten was Dickensian. Yeah, that's a little further ahead. I've done some Dickensian stuff, but I don't think I've done anything Regency. Most that I understood from that time period were the outfits that I wore. And I'll be honest, the only reason I knew about the outfits is because the Hamilton musical. But then I watched the Bridgerton show on Netflix, and that was actually a really, really fun watch. And I'm really glad that I did watch it because it gave me an excellent crash course about the entire concept of the marriage market. It's kind of wild, the way at least it's presented in the Bridgerton show, that some of these young women's lives are completely overshadowed by their need to find a good match. And of course, this is just for, you know, the upper class, the ton, the nobles. So what's it like for everyone who's underneath them? How are they getting married? I was wondering about that the entire time. It's like, this is only for the rich people, right? So what's everyone else doing? So with that, let's go now talk about the paranormal aspect of the book. The book spine literally reads Paranormal Regency Romance. And the word paranormal, I think, is doing a lot of work, and I'm wondering why they used it. When I personally think of paranormal, I'm thinking like maybe haunted houses, ghosts, alien abductions, something with a touch of horror. And technically, werewolves would fall under that umbrella, not in the Twilight way, but like, you know, in the abject terror kind of way. But these are shifters. They're not werewolves, and they're entirely different. Yes, Alfred and his pack do worship a moon goddess, but their lives are not dominated by the moon. They're not all wolves either. When I think of the word paranormal, I'm thinking of suspense driven by sublime horror. And it really makes me wonder if the entire genre is just trying to avoid the word fantasy. Because let's think about it. I'm a fantasy nerd. I know what's accompanying that word. I love fantasy, but when we think of it, we're thinking maybe knights in shining armor rescuing damsels. We're thinking maybe Game of Thrones with this gritty, angry, dark storyline. We're thinking of like maybe an excuse to be misogynistic to women. It's like, oh, that's how it was in that kind of environment. That's how it works. We're thinking maybe Lord of the Rings, where everybody is ridiculous. But for me, fantasy can mean something completely different. Outside of like, you know, we call them, I guess you could call them shippers. People don't really put romance onto the fantasy idea. If fantasy is involved, it's because the hero in question got the lady as a reward. The shiny lamp, I guess you could say. Sexy lamp is what they're calling them. Yeah, the sexy lamp reward. It's Italian. It's a prestigious award. But fantasy for me means anything outside of the norm. I would define it the moment any kind of magical influence enters the story. Like, let's say your barista brews a coffee with a hint of a good luck charm. That I think would enter into fantasy. We would call it urban fantasy. You could argue that Harry Potter is a little bit of an urban fantasy. One of my favorite urban fantasy stories would be Sunshine by Robin McKinley. That's kind of like post-apocalypse, but it's still a very recognizable world for us. Like, you know, she works in a coffee shop and she learns more things about herself, and there is a very unique romance happening there. So I would call that urban fantasy. But because vampires are involved, we could also maybe slide into the paranormal. It really depends. I think there's like an entire conversation that could be had about genres and niche classifications, because we could probably make a classification for the most niche of genres and that would be the classification. So I don't know if paranormal really works. We can merit the debate on this one all the time, or debate on the merit of it, excuse me. But we will be here literally all day, and I am already getting too far into a tangent. So moving on, we get to add a new trope to our list. Horses. I think this one is a lot more fun than dead women, so we've got that going for us. And honestly, it's really hilarious that literally every single book that I've read so far in this podcast has included horses in some way, shape, or form other than transportation. I don't think I mentioned it before in the first episode, but even Crown Prince's Bought Bride had horses in there. One, when they thought that Maddie might be pregnant, she wasn't allowed to ride any of the horses. And two, there was a mare in the royal stables that belonged to Remy's dead fiance, who nobody could bear riding, but it was still there. It's like, you know, horses have to be ridden and exercised, right? Right? Anyway. But yeah, almost every single book has got the horses trope going for it. It's hilarious, really. But unlike the previous books, the horses actually played a role in the plot, and it was a driving focus of the character's motivations. Even She Dreamed of a Cowboy would be, I'd say, horse adjacent. It did feature danger with a horse, one with Zodiac getting sick and then Skylar falling off the horse, but that's not, it's part of the story. It's not a driving focus in the plot. And horses were not Skylar's motivation for going to Montana. It was ranch life that she wanted to experience. There was actually a lot more going on with the horses that I didn't mention in A Wolf in Duke's Clothing. So Felicity's mother had been killed in a riding accident. And as a result, Felicity's father basically drank himself into a stupor because he loved his wife so very much and just couldn't bear to live life without her sober, I guess. And the uncle, the mother's brother, had like this just deep abiding hatred of the fact that Felicity still enjoyed horses, even though one had killed her mother, his sister. And he's like, how dare you have any affinity for these beasts? They're terrible. And Felicity's like, no, if you have good breeding, things like that wouldn't happen to women. So it's crazy. And there's still more. It's insane. Like, I know I mentioned her mares, but she also had a breeding stallion named Himself, of all things. And boy, he was just not cooperating with servicing the mares. And oh no, that stable hand looks really nervous when anybody talks about that stallion. It's like they're trying to tell us something. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that kid's the horse, and it's all really rather funny. That's mostly it for Wolf in Duke's Clothing, but I will take a moment to mention that I am aware of the Omegaverse concept. I'm sure there are people screaming at me. It's like, there's Omegaverse. Don't you know about Omegaverse? No, I did. I do know about this. Lindsay Ellis did a very excellent video on ethics in romance publishing. And it featured a scandal based on the Omegaverse genre. And having said all that now, even though Wolf in Duke's Clothing explicitly mentions an alpha, a beta, and an omega, as far as I understand the concept, I'm not going to call this Omegaverse. I'm pretty confident that it borrows some pieces of the genre, but I'm pretty sure it's got less to do with Omegaverse, and it's more focused on the shifting aspects of all the characters. But at the end of it all, I seriously do recommend to go read A Wolf in Duke's Clothing. It's been one of my favorite reads on the podcast so far, and it might even become a favorite of mine in general, I might say. Much like how Cold Case Colorado will go on the shelf of shame, our Wolf Duke will get a place on the Gold Star shelf. So what have I been currently reading? Well, you might be surprised on this one, but I have been reading something from Line Webtoon called Let's Play. Yeah, I do enjoy myself some graphic media. I guess you could say graphic as in like comic books, graphic novels, comic books, manga. I was a manga girl in high school. I will tell you that right now. One of my favorites was a Sarah Celestial Legend, but that's a different animal. But I have been reading Let's Play. If you enjoy video game references, if you enjoy a romance or a potential for romance comics, if you enjoy, like, you know, I don't know if it's really counterculture anymore, because, like, you know, when I was growing up, like, nerd video game manga comics, those were kind of like counterculture, but now they're a lot more mainstream and it's really very fun these days. If you enjoy any of that, you'll really like Let's Play. It's not usually in my wheelhouse of webtoons and comics that I like to read, but Let's Play has been really engaging. The characters are so relatable, so wonderful. The artist plays with the fourth wall concept, one of my absolute favorite characters. Vicky is definitely a fourth wall breaker, and if I have goals, I want to be Vicky. Vicky is goals, I will tell you that right now. But the comic is about a video game designer called Sam. She wants to be a video game developer, but her trajectory seems to get derailed when a video blogger who does Let's Plays, that's where the name of the comic comes from, basically finds her game and trashes it. And his entire fan base just goes for the throat. They do what bad fans do, and they basically Zergrush her entire page on her website, I guess you could say. And the comic is basically fallout following this interaction. And it's really, really great. Is there a question, though, of comics? Are comics literature? Well, you're probably not going to be surprised to hear me say this, but yes, comics are literature. What is literature? Literature is presenting an idea and writing it down and distributing it. An idea could be anything. Great things have been said and distributed. Horrible things have been said and distributed. Middling things have been said and distributed. Literature is simply the act of writing something, creating something, and giving it to another person to consume. It's media. I would even argue in some ways that literature could be anything. Visual media could be literature. It's communication. Communication itself could be literature, but that I'm pretty liberal with this concept. I'm definitely the kind of person who, I'm not going to put literature in a box and say, it is only this. No, it's fluid. Our entire society is fluid and changing. Just because comics didn't exist when the first story was written a billion years ago, it doesn't mean that comics cannot then become literature as they come into our consciousness as a community. It's how we communicate ideas. And yeah, comics can be childish, but comics are also useful. We didn't have a comic book hero named Captain America for nothing. We didn't have a comic book hero named Superman created by Jewish artists for nothing. They had a point. They had something to say. Just because it was quote-unquote for children doesn't mean that it's meant to be discarded. And just because it's a comic format or an animated format doesn't mean that it is necessarily for children. Anybody who has seen maybe American Dad or anything on Adult Swim, that's not for children. But it's still communicating an idea to an audience. So yes, comics are literature, But like I have said before, context matters. It really does define what you're trying to say and who you're trying to say it to. What is your message? What are you saying? And the Let's Play comic, I think, is saying romance can happen in a surprise, but also you can grow, you can become self-confident, you can have goals, and how can you get to those goals? Sam as a character is probably one of my favorite heroines because in a lot of ways, I kind of relate to her. I was a lot like Sam 10 years ago. And I really hope that there's maybe another young woman just like me who needs a little bit of comfort that she's not completely alone. And she gets to read Sam in Let's Play. And she's like, okay, I can do this. So I think it's important. And webtoons are great. So like webtoons in general are pretty great. My favorite place to read them is on Line Webtoon. It's a specific app. And my favorite webtoons include Lore Olympus by Rachel Smith. There's Always Human, I think. Yeah, Always Human. That's a really great one. That's been completed for some time. Famous ones include Yumi Cells. Yumi Cells is hilarious. I love that one. Oh, what's another one that I really enjoy? Blades of Furry is hilarious. I'm not going to say anything else about that one. Just go look at it. It's great. You want it. Muted is another favorite one of mine. Basically, lesbian witches in Louisiana swamps. It's gorgeous. Go look at it. There's just some really, really gorgeous art in these. And they don't have to be static comics at all. So instead of being like a page by page comic, you scroll through the webtoon. Because we're scrolling people now, like I said. Society is fluid. We scroll through things now. And webtoons can include also music and some animation. A really good example of that one would probably be the My Giant Nerd Boyfriend comics. They add a lot of animations in theirs. And I guess that really got away from me. Really, what I wanted to say at the beginning was I started reading Let's Play again recently. It's technically a reread. Because the new season is finally out. We've waited almost a year for the new season. I'm so excited. I've read the first couple of episodes from the new season and they are wonderful. I love them. Illegal cliffhangers everywhere. It's great. Oh my gosh, you gotta go see them. They're really, really good at illegal cliffhangers. But yeah, so that is going to be it from us today. Like I said, we're going to be going through a little bit of some construction. So if there are some hiccups, please do be patient. We will do our very best to make sure everything is smooth and continues working. And I will reveal more when we've got things pretty much more sewn up. And I am really so excited to share them with you. So thank you again so much for joining me today for Heather Reads the Podcast. It's been great fun. You can go ahead and visit us at heatherreads.com for more. Our music today was produced by The Harpies. We will have links to their music on our page. And if you want to get in contact with us, we're going to go ahead and share some new contact info in a little bit later. But you can still send us at podcast@heatherreads.com for now. And if you just like the show or just want to say hi, have any questions, you can go ahead and pop us over a little line. We'd love to hear from you. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster, and our technical advisor is Kwang Hyun Cho. And remember, it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.